He would have leaned over my shoulder the way he used to, whizzed through the mass of picnic emails, deleted them, and simply replied, "I will bring the hummus and the black bin liners." I would be 100% looking forward to it. It would be a 100% lovely thing. Oh, come on. Brace up. Keep buggering on. The Summer Concert. Thursday, 4th of July, 2013. We roared up through the landscaped parkland. We were late because Billy was trying to map the route on the iPhone and we came off at the wrong junction. Clambered out to the smell of cut grass, the chestnut leaves hanging heavy and green, the light turning golden. Staggering under the weight of the bassoon case, the rug, my handbag, the picnic basket, and a second basket with Diet Cokes and oatmeal cookies that wouldn't fit in the first basket, Billy and I headed towards the path marked Concert This Way. We came out into the open and gasped. It looked like a painting, a gracious wisteria-clad house with an old stone terrace and lawns leading down to a lake. The terrace was laid out like a stage, with music stands and a grand piano, and rows of chairs below. Billy held my hand tightly, as we stood, wondering where to go. Boys were running around, setting up the instruments and music stands, all excited. Then Jeremiah and Bikram shouted, "Billy!" And he looked up hopefully at me. "Go on," I said. "I'll bring the stuff." As I watched him go, I saw the parents laying out their picnics on the lawn next to the lake. No one was alone. They were all in lovely couples, which had presumably not been formed on Match.com or Plenty of Fish or Twitter, but in the days when people still did meet each other in real life. Started disastrously, imagining being there with Mark again, on time because he'd driven the car and operated the sat-nav, carrying a modest amount of stuff, which Mark would have edited before departure, all holding hands, Billy and Mabel between us. And we'd be together, the four of us, on the rug instead of... "Did you bring the kitchen table?" I turned. Mr. Wallacker looked unexpectedly glamorous, in black suit trousers and a white shirt, slightly unbuttoned. He was looking towards the house, adjusting his cufflinks.
"Want a hand with all that?"
"No, no, I'm fine," I said, as a Tupperware box fell out of the basket, spilling egg sandwiches onto the grass.
"Leave it," he ordered. "Give me the bassoon. I'll get someone to bring the rest down. Got anyone to sit with?"
"Please don't speak to me like I'm one of your schoolboys," I said. "I'm not Bridget No Mates Darcy, and I'm not helpless, and I can carry a picnic basket. And just because you've got everything under control and all lakes and orchestras, it doesn't mean..." There was a crash on the terrace. An entire section of music stands fell over, sending a cello bouncing off the terrace and down the hill, followed by a shrieking bunch of boys.
"Totally under control," he said, giving a little snort of amusement as a double bass and a tuba crashed over next, bringing more music stands with them. "Better go. Give me that."
He took the bassoon and set off towards the house.
"Oh, by the way, your dress," he called over his shoulder.
"Yes?"
"Slightly see-through with the sun behind it."
I looked down at the dress. Oh, fuck. It was see-through.
"Good effect," he shouted, without looking back.
I stared after him, indignant, confused. He was just sexist. He was reducing me to a helpless sex object, and he was married, and just... I started to pick up the basket, when a man in a waiter's outfit appeared, and said, "I've been asked to carry these down for you, madam." And another voice called, "Bridget!" It was Fazia Seth, Bikram's mum. "Come and sit with us." It was fine, because the husbands all sat on one side talking about business, so we girls could gossip, occasionally shoving food into overexcited offspring who swooped on us like seagulls. When it was time for the concert, Nicolette, who was, naturally, chair of the concert committee, started the proceedings with an astonishingly sycophantic speech about Mr. Wallacker. Inspiring, invigorating, etc., etc. Arousing, ejaculating. "She's changed her tune a bit since he came up with a stately home," muttered Fazia. "Is it his stately home?" I said.
I don't know. He fixed it anyway. And Nicolette's been completely up his arse ever since. Wonder what the orange wife makes of it. As Nicolette finally drew to a close, Mr. Wallacker jumped onto the terrace and strode in front of the band, silencing the applause.
Thank you, he said, with a slight smile. I must say, I agree with every word. And now, the reason you're here, I give you your sensational sons.
And with that, he raised his baton. The big swing band burst into an enthusiastic, if slightly out of tune, flourish, and they were off. It was actually completely magical, the lights softening, the music ringing out over the grounds. The performance of The Age of Aquarius by the Recorder Ensemble did not, it's true, entirely lend itself to six-year-olds on recorders. We were all giggling helplessly, but I was glad to be giggling. Billy was one of the littlest ones, on near the end, and by the time it got to his turn, I was beside myself with nerves. I watched him walk over to the piano with his music, looking so small and scared, and I just wanted to go and scoop him up. Then Mr. Wallacker strode over, whispered something to Billy, and sat down at the piano. I didn't know Mr. Wallacker could play. He started with a surprisingly professional jazz introduction and nodded to Billy to begin. Although there were no words, I could hear every one of them as Billy puffed his way painfully through I'd Do Anything, Mr. Wallacker gently following every wrong note and wobble. I would, Billy. I would do anything for you, I thought, tears welling up. My little boy, with all his struggles. Applause broke out. Mr. Wallacker whispered to Billy and glanced at me. Billy was bursting with pride. Fortunately, Eros and Atticus were taking the stand to perform their own adaptation of the Trout Quintet on their flutes, bending and swooping in a pretentious manner which pulled me back from self-congratulatory and existentially despairing tears to suppressed hysteria again. And then it was all over, and Billy rushed up, beaming for a hug, and then ran off with his little gang. It was a warm, liquidy night, beautiful, romantic. The other parents drifted off, wandering down to the lake hand in hand. I sat on the rug on my own for a bit, wondering what to do. I was desperate for a drink, but driving. I realized the bag with the Diet Cokes and oatmeal cookies had got left behind. Glanced at Billy. He was still tearing around with his gang, all biffing each other over the head. I headed up to the bushes, found the bag, and looked back at the scene. Slowly, a huge orange harvest moon was rising over the woods. Couples were laughing together in their evening clothes, hugging their joint offspring, remembering all the shared years which had brought them there. I stepped into the bushes where no one could see, and wiped away a tear, taking a giant slurp of Diet Coke and wishing it was neat vodka. They were growing up. They weren't babies anymore. It was all going so fast. I realized I was not just sad, but scared. Scared of trying not to get lost driving in the dark. Scared of all the years ahead of doing this alone. Concerts, prize givings, Christmases, teenagers, problems.
You can't even get plastered, can you?
Mr. Wallacker's shirt looked very white in the moonlight. His profile, half in silhouette, looked almost noble.
You all right?
Yes, I said indignantly, wiping my fist across my eyes. Why do you keep bursting up on me? Why do you keep asking me if I'm all right?
I know when a woman is foundering and pretending not to be.
He took a step closer. The air was heavy with jasmine, roses. I breathed unsteadily. It felt as though we were being drawn together by the moon. He reached out like I was a child, or a Bambi or something, and touched my hair.
There aren't any nits in here, are there? He said.
I raised my face, heady with the scent of him, feeling the roughness of his cheek against mine, his lips against my skin. Then suddenly I remembered all those creepy married guys on the websites and burst out, "What are you doing? Just because I'm on my own, it doesn't mean I'm desperate and fair game."
You're married. Oh, I'm Mr. Wallacker. I'm all married and perfect. And what do you mean, foundering? And I know I'm a rubbish mother and single, but you don't have to rub my nose in it and... Billy, your mummy's kissing Mr. Wallacker.
Billy, Bikram and Jeremiah burst out from the bushes.
Ah, Billy, Mr. Wallacker said, your mummy's just, hurt herself and...
Did she hurt her mouth? Said Billy, looking puzzled, at which Jeremiah, who had older brothers, spurted out laughing.
Oh, Mr. Wallacker, I was looking for you. Oh, God, now it was Nicolette. I was wondering if we should say a few words to the parents, to... Bridget, what are you doing here?
Looking for some oatmeal cookies, I said brightly.
In the bushes?
How odd.
Can I have one? Can I have one?
The boys mercifully started yelling and dive-bombing my bag so I could bend down, covering my confusion.
I mean, I thought it would be nice to round things off, Nicolette went on. People want to see you, Mr. Wallacker, and hear you. I think you're fiercely talented. I really do.
Not sure a speech is quite the thing right now. Maybe just go down there and case it out. Would you mind, Mrs. Martinez?
No, of course, said Nicolette coldly, giving me a funny look, just as Atticus ran up saying, Mummy, I want to see my therapist.
Right, said Mr. Wallacker, when Nicolette and the boys had disappeared. You've made yourself very clear. I apologize. I will go back to not make a speech. He was starting to head off, then turned. But just for the record, other people's lives are not always as perfect as they appear. Once you crack the shell. The horror, the horror. Friday, 5th of July, 2013. Dating sites checked, 5. Winks, 0. Messages, 0. Likes, 0. Online shopping sites visited, 12. Words of rewrite written, 0. 9:30 a.m. Humph. Oh, my God. Well, humph. Foundering. Man-whore. Lecherous sexist married bastard. Humph. Right. Must get on with headering up, i.e. finding all of Hedda's lines in the rewritten version and putting them back to the way they were in the first place, which is actually quite fun. 9:31 a.m. The thing about internet dating is the minute you start feeling lonely, confused or desperate, you can simply click on one of the sites and it's like a sweetie shop. There are just millions of other quite plausible people all actually available, at least in theory. Have vision of offices up and down the country full of people pretending to work but clicking on Match.com and OkCupid and somehow getting through the lonely tedium of the day. Right, must get on. 10:31 a.m. Oh, God. What was he doing, Mr. Wallacker? Does he do that all the time? It's completely unprofessional. What did he mean, foundering? 10:35 a.m. Just looked up foundering. To proceed in confusion. Umph. I'm going to go back online. 10:45 a.m. Just logged on. 0 people winked at you. 0 people chose you as their favourite. 0 people sent you a message. Great. 11 a.m. Look at all these mentarts. Married but in an open relationship. You see? 12:15 p.m. Jude's internet dating was a nightmare. Strings of communication with strangers suddenly left unanswered. I don't want strange bits of men all over the place. Far better to get on with leaves. Must figure out how the yacht honeymoon could work in Sweden rather than Hawaii. I mean, Stockholm is warm in the summer, right? Doesn't one of the girls from ABBA live on an island off Stockholm? 12:30 p.m. Maybe we'll go on Net-a-Porter and look at the sale. 12:45 p.m. What is happening to me? Just put 3 dresses into my shopping basket, then logged off, then logged on again and realized I felt hurt,
because none of the dresses had winked back. 1 p.m. Maybe we'll just look at cute 30-year-olds on Match.com for a minute.
1:05 p.m. Just spooled down the line of cute 30-year-olds and screamed out loud. There, bold as you please, was a picture of Rockstar.
Mid-match collision. Friday, 5th of July, 2013. Continued. Rockstar 30 was grinning cheerfully, the same picture he has on Twitter. He is, apparently, looking for women aged 25 to 55, so it wasn't because I was too old. It was just because he didn't... Oh, my God! His profile says he has particular fondness for walks on Hampstead Heath and people who make me laugh and mini breaks in pubs by rivers with full English breakfasts. And he really likes skydiving. Skydiving? I mean, it's okay, isn't it? It's just what people do. It's quite funny, it's...
Suddenly doubled over in pain in my armchair over the laptop.
1:10 p.m. Rockstar is online now. But then I'm online now too. Oh, God.
1:11 p.m. Quickly logged off and paced deranged around the room, stuffing bits of half-eaten cheese and crushed Nutribars from the bottom of my handbag into my mouth. What am I to do? What is the etiquette? Cannot possibly log on again and have another look at Rockstar, or he will think I'm stalking him, or worse, better, looking at pictures of cute 30-year-olds to smoothly replace him with another toy boy.
1:15 p.m. Just checked my email, which is now, of course, as well as being overrun by Ocado emails and staff present emails and emails from various country pubs I have imagined staying in with Rockstar, also inundated with endless emails from singleparentmix.com and OkCupid and Match.com saying, "Wow, you're proving popular today," and "Someone just checked out your profile," and "Jonesy49, someone just winked at you." Stared closely at two recent emails from Match.com. "Jonesy49, wow, someone just checked out your profile."
1:17 p.m. Could not find out who they were from, because I've not paid to properly sign on to Match.com. One of them was from someone aged 59, and the other aged 30. It had to be Rockstar. It was too much of a coincidence.
1:20 p.m. Wow, Jonesy49, somebody just winked at you. Again, aged 30.
1:25 p.m. Clearly, Rockstar has clocked that I have checked out his profile. What am I going to do? Pretend it hasn't happened? No, that's just... I mean, the whole thing is just... You can't pretend something like that hasn't happened, can you? We're human beings, and we did care about each other, I thought. And... Text from Rockstar.
Jonesy49. I mean, Bridget. I mean, at JonesyBJ.
Stared at phone, mind spooling through all the texts I'd made up in case he got in touch. I'm sorry, who is this? Look, you've made your decision and expressed it in an unnecessarily brutal way, so bugger off. Instead, impulsively texted back.
Rockstar 30. I mean, Roxby. I mean, at Rockstar. Nervous laughter, gabbles.
I just want to make it absolutely clear that I wasn't surfing around Match.com looking for cute 30-year-olds, but doing some important research for the leaves in his hair. Ha, ha, ha. I had no idea you liked skydiving so much. Oh, God, lunges at wine bottle.
There was a pause, then another ping on the phone. Jonesy?
Yes, Rockstar? There was another pause. What was he going to say? Something kind? Something patronizingly meant to be kind? Something apologizing? Something that would hurt?
I miss you.
I stared at it. All those mean things I had planned to say. My finger hovered over the phone. Then I simply texted back the truth. I miss you too. Then immediately thought, shit, why didn't I just put one of the less mean but funny ones? Now he'll just have got his ego reassurance and bugger off. Text ping.
Jonesy?
Another ping.
Yells, Jonesy.
Me. Calm, slightly distracted, yes? And we were off.
Roxter. You've gone awfully quiet.
Me. Airy, dismissive. Well, it's hardly surprising. How dare you draw attention to my age in that impertinent and unnecessary fashion? Oh, look at me, I'm so young and you're so old.
Roxter. Oh, look at me, I'm more pleased with myself because I won the see who can keep the texting silence going longest competition.
I laughed. I was indeed pleased with myself.
There was such a rush of joy and relief that we were back with that secure feeling of knowing someone cares and understands your sense of humour, and it wasn't all cold and empty and over. We were still there. But then, at the same time, there was a dark lurking fear of getting back into it.
Jonesy?
Yes, Roxter?
I waited, texting Ping.
But I do still think you're really old.
That's disgusting. That's absolutely against the rules of feel like ringing the police. Surely there should be some sort of dating ombudsman who legislates against this sort of thing.
Another texting Ping. Stared at the phone as if it was a creature in a space movie. I didn't know what it was going to do next. It might suddenly rear up into a monster or turn into a gentle little bunny. I opened it.
Joke, Jonesy.
Joke.
Hides.
Looked eerily from side to side. Another texting Ping.
I have been thinking about the curry chicken pie night, with some regret, for 3 weeks, 6 days and 15 hours, which, if you check an Old Moore's almanac, could technically be described as a calendar month. I was completely confused.
And plastered. Please forgive me. You are younger looking and younger behaved than any woman I have ever met, including my niece, who is 3.
I miss you. What was he saying? Was he saying he'd rethought the whole thing and wanted to be with me? But did I want to be with him?
Jonesy?
Yes, Roxter?
Will you at least have lunch with me?
Roxter.
Or dinner?
And again, or preferably lunch and dinner?
Suddenly had flashbacks to all the delicious dinners and aftermaths we had enjoyed, and had to stop self-texting back.
And breakfast?
Maybe Tom was right. Maybe Roxter wasn't just dismissing me as a sad old bag. Texted, please be quiet. I am looking out of the window for passing dot-com billionaires wearing walking boots.
I am going to come over and fight them.
Would I need to be at the lunch or dinner, or would it just mainly be the food?
We could meet without food, if you like.
This was unheard of. He must be really, really serious. I needed time to digest this. Another texting Ping.
If you need time to digest this, if you'll pardon the pun, I'll wait.
And another.
Maybe just a packet of crisps.
Was going to text cheese and onion. But maybe that suggested I thought he was being cheesy and there were onions hidden amongst the nice stuff. So again, I just texted what was true. I'd like that, as long as you promise not to fart. Rekindling. Thursday, 11th of July, 2013. Days of continuous sunshine, 11. Raindrops fallen on head, 0. Unbelievable. 2 p.m. Is boiling hot. Still, no one can believe their luck. Everyone is out in the streets, bunking off work, drinking, wild for sex, and complaining that it is too hot.
Texting is completely back on again with Roxter, and he has been lovely, despite Talitha's dire warnings about taking someone back after they have dumped you, and despite Tom's dire warnings about people who are all text and no trousers, and professional warnings about the fact that I could only expect a future of mixed messages, and had I thought about what I actually wanted, apart from endless texting and sporadic nights of sex. Roxter has explained about the curry and lateness on the breakup night, and said he wasn't, as I suspected all along, having a curry with colleagues. In fact, he was sitting on his own, stuffing his face with chicken korma, poppadoms and lager, because he was so confused, and suddenly overcrowded about being a proper boyfriend, and maybe becoming a father figure. And then, after he made his breakup speech, I seemed completely fine about it, almost relieved, delighted to break up, until the farting rant. And then, after that, he didn't know what to do. And he is cheerful and sweet and light, and so much better than lecherous married bastards. We are seeing each other on Saturday for a walk on Hampstead Heath.
Blimey. Saturday, 13th of July, 2013. 3 p.m. Frantic preparation. Had to deal with Mum, who was taking Mabel and Billy to tea at Fortnum and Mason. Good luck with that one, Mum.
Oh, Mabel's wearing leggings, is she? Where do you keep your colanders?
Dived out for leg wax and toenail polish, then washed hair and put on the summer concert see-through floaty dress. Then thought it was bad karma, so changed it to a non-see-through pale pink one. Then got text from Farzia, asking if Billy and Jeremiah were going to football tomorrow, as Bikram didn't want to go unless they all went. Then lost my flip-flops, but couldn't wear my other sandals because they'd squashed the toenail varnish. Then finally got to the pub with 2 minutes to spare and rushed to the loo to make sure I didn't have too much makeup on, like Barbara Cartland. Eventually sat down in the fabulous sunshine in the garden, like a relaxed, on-time goddess of light and calm. And as Rockstar appeared, a seagull shat on my shoulder. It was so exciting to see Rockstar, looking gorgeous in a bright blue polo shirt, and be falling about laughing again about the seagull, and just having fun, and feeling like children on a spree, only more sexy. We had a couple of beers, and Rockstar had his food, and tried repeatedly to get the seagull poo off my boob, and I was so happy. Then we set off for our walk, and the heath was teeming with people rejoicing in the sunshine and complaining about it, couples in each other's arms, and I was part of one too, arm in arm with Rockstar. Then we came to a sun-dappled glade and sat down on a bench we'd sat down on often before. And after Rockstar had finished laughing about the red dots he'd noticed on my legs from the leg wax, he looked serious. And he started to say that he'd been thinking, and although he really, really wanted to have children of his own, and really, really thought he ought to be with someone his own age, and didn't know what his friends would say or what his mum would say, he just didn't think he would find anyone he got on with the way he got on with me. And he wanted to do it all, the whole thing, properly, and climb trees on the heath, and be a dad to Billy and Mabel. I stared at him. I did really heart Rockstar. I hearted that he was so beautiful and young and sexy, but more than that, hearted who he was and what he stood for. He was funny and together and light and kind and practical and emotional but contained. That he was also born when I was 21. And if we'd both been born at the same time, how could we know what would have happened? What I did know as I looked at him was that I didn't want to ruin Rockstar's life. And my kids were absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, the best thing I had in my life. I didn't want to deprive him of doing all that for himself. Crucially, though, I suspected that, even though he wanted to, Rockstar just couldn't do it. He would try, but then sometime in a week or 6 weeks or 6 months, he would go all uncertain again and keep shorting out. And the thing about reaching the advanced age of, 35, was that I just didn't want all that uncertainty and emotional roller coaster and pain anymore. I just couldn't bear it. Moreover, I did not want to be like Judy Dench with Daniel Craig at the end of Skyfall, the age difference between whom must be about the same as between me and Rockstar. But then, in Skyfall, when you think about it, Judy Dench was actually the Bond girl, not the frizzy-haired one with no character who decided, in a weird anti-feminist twist surely, she wanted to be Miss Moneypenny. Judy Dench was the one Daniel Craig really loved and ended up carrying through the bullets. But then would Daniel Craig actually have had sex with Judy Dench? I mean, if she wasn't dead? How great if they'd done a beautifully lit sex scene with Judy Dench looking gorgeous in a black La Perla slip.
Now there would be a rebranding feminist.
Jonesy, are you pretending not to have an orgasm again?
I looked back, startled at Rockster, who was now down on one knee. How could I have been so rude as to stare into space for so long when... God, he was so, so, so gorgeous, but...
Rockster, I blurted, you don't really mean all this, do you? You're not actually going to be able to do it.
Roxby McDuff looked thoughtful for a moment, then laughed ruefully, got to his feet, and shook his head.
No, Jonesy, you're right. I'm actually not.
Then we hugged each other with lust and happiness and sadness and tenderness, but I knew that this time the game was up. It really was over. As we let go, I opened my eyes, and over Rockster's shoulder saw Mr. Wallacker standing stock still and staring at us. Mr. Wallacker caught my eye, impassive, said nothing, and in his usual fashion, simply strode away. On the way home, in the midst of confusion and sadness and Sellers' remorse and overheating and shock at Mr. Wallacker seeing what looked like an engagement but was actually a breakup, I felt that overwhelming thing that people feel when... that I'd... that once again, at a moment of parting, I hadn't... that you absolutely have to tell people that... And simultaneously, spookily, the text pinged.
Jonesy.
Yes, Rockster.
Rockster. Just wanted to tell you that I will always... H.
Me.
E.
Rockster.
A.
Me.
R. Rockster. T. U.
Me.
M. Rockster. E.
Me.
To you.
Rockster.
G.
Me.
B. Rockster. H.
Me.
X.
I will always heart you. Me to you. Great big hug. Or possibly hamburger. I waited. Was he going to leave me as the final one in the final thread? There was a ping.
I meant fart, not heart, you understand.
Then another ping.
I didn't. And I will, always. Now don't reply.
Kiss, kiss.
Roxby McDuff.
A gentleman to the last. Giving in. Saturday, 13th of July, 2013, continued. When I got home, there was an hour before Mum was due back with the kids. I sat down, finally, in an armchair with a cup of tea, and I just gave in and accepted it all. It was really over with sweet, lovely Rockster. And I was sad. But so it was. And I couldn't hold all these balls in the air. I couldn't rewrite a film about an updated Hedda Gabler on a yacht in Hawaii moved to Stockholm by 6 different people. I couldn't do internet dating with weird strangers. I couldn't keep this mad matrix of schedules and zombie apocalypses and Build-A-Bear parties in my head and deal with nearly confusingly snogging married teachers at the school and wear Grazia-style clothes and try to have a boyfriend and do a job and be a mother. I tried to stop myself thinking I should do anything. Check my emails, go to Zumba, get on OkCupid, read the latest insane rewrite of the leaves on his yacht. I just sat there and thought, this will just have to do. Me, the kids, just let the days flow by. I didn't feel sad, really. I couldn't remember the feeling of not having to do the next thing, not having to squeeze the last second out of the day, or find out why the fridge was making that noise. And I'd love to say something marvellous came out of it, but it didn't, really. My bum probably got fatter or something. But I sensed a sort of mental clarity emerging, a sense that what I needed to do now was find some peace. I need to be gentle now, I thought, blinking rapidly. It's a gentle time. Never mind anyone else. We'll just be us. Me, B,
Billy and Mabel. Just feel the wind in our hair and the rain on our faces. Just enjoy them growing up. Don't miss it. They'll be gone soon. I stare dramatically ahead, thinking, I am brave, though I am alone. Then realized that the phone was quacking somewhere. Where was it? Eventually located phone in the downstairs toilet and jumped in alarm, seeing a string of texts from Chloe. Just had a call from your mum. Is your phone off? They've been thrown out of Fortnum's. She wants you to come. Mabel is crying and she's forgotten the key. She's trying to find Hamleys and they're lost. Are you getting any of my texts? Okay, I've told her to get in a taxi and I'll meet them at the house with the key. Just then the doorbell rang. Opened it to find Mum with Billy and Mabel, both crying, hot, sweaty and smeared with cake, on the doorstep. Got everyone downstairs, telly on, computer on, Mum with a cup of tea, when doorbell rang again. It was Chloe, uncharacteristically in tears. Oh, Chloe, I'm so sorry, I said. I just turned the phone off for a little bit to just get over something and missed all your... It's not that, she wailed. It's Graham. It turned out Chloe and Graham had taken out a rowing boat on the Serpentine, and Chloe had prepared an immaculate picnic hamper with cutlery and china, at which Graham said, I have something to say. Chloe, of course, thought Graham was going to ask her to marry him, but then he announced that he had met somebody in Houston on youngfreeandsingle.com and was getting transferred to Texas to go and live with her. He said I was too perfect, she sobbed. I'm not perfect. I just feel I have to pretend to be perfect. And you don't like me either because you think I'm too perfect too. Oh, Chloe, I don't. You're not perfect, I said, throwing my arms around her. Aren't I? She said, looking at me hopefully. No, yes, I gabbled. I mean, not perfect, though you are great. And I suddenly felt emotional. I know middle-class working mothers always say this, but I genuinely don't know what I would do without you helping me and being so perfect, I mean, so great. What I mean is, it's just a relief that everything in your life isn't completely perfect, though obviously I'm very sorry that that fuckwit Graham was so fuck-witted as to... But I thought you'd only like me if I was perfect. No, I was frightened of you because you were perfect, because it made me feel so not perfect. But I always think you're perfect. Mummy, can we go up to our room? Granny's being weird, said Billy, appearing up the stairs. Granny's got a tail, said Mabel. Billy, Mabel, said Chloe delightedly. Can I take them upstairs? Great. I'll go and see to Granny. Check if she's grown a tail, I said, looking sternly at Mabel and adding reassuringly to Chloe, you're not perfect. Aren't I? You really mean it? No. Really, definitely not perfect at all. Oh, thank you, she said. Neither are you. And headed up the stairs with the children, looking and being absolutely perfect. Got downstairs to find Mum, who, if she did have a tail, had hidden it very well beneath the coat dress, banging through all the cupboards saying, Where do you put the tea strainer? I use tea bags, I muttered grumpily. Tea bags? Duh. I mean, you might have left the phone on. It's only responsible if you have children who can't behave themselves. What have you got on your top? Have you been out in that dress? The trouble with flesh pink is it can wash you out, can't it? I burst into tears, straight in her face. Now, come on, Bridget. You've got to pull yourself together. You've got to soldier on. You can't. I literally thought she was just never going to stop saying, you can't. But then she burst into tears too. You're not helping, I sobbed. You just think I'm rubbish. You're always trying to change me and think I'm doing it all wrong and make me wear different colours, I wailed. Mum suddenly snuffled to a halt and stared at me. Oh, Bridget, I'm so sorry, she said, almost in a whisper. I'm so very,
very sorry. She stumbled awkwardly, knelt in front of me, put her arms around me, and pulled me to her. My little girl. It was the first time I'd actually felt Mum's boof. It was crispy, almost solid. She didn't seem to mind it being squashed as she held me close. I really liked it. I wanted her to give me a bottle of warm milk or something. It was so dreadful what happened to Mark. I couldn't bear to think. You're doing so... Oh, Bridget, I miss Daddy. I miss him so much, so much. But you've got to just keep going, haven't you? That's half the battle. No, I wailed. It's just papering over the cracks. I should have. Daddy always said, he said, why can't you just let her be? That's my problem. I can't let anything be. Everything has to be perfect, and it isn't, she wailed. At least, I don't mean you. I mean you are, you're doing so well. Oh, where have I put my lipstick? And Paul, you know Paul, the pastry chef at St. Oswald's. I thought, you know, he was always bringing me little savoury profiteroles, taking me into the kitchen. But he turns out to be one of these... I started laughing then. Oh, Mum, I could have told you that Paul was gay from the moment I saw him. But there's no such thing as gay, darling. It's just laziness and... Billy appeared on the stairs. Mummy, Chloe's crying upstairs. Oh. He looked at us, puzzled. Why is everybody crying? Just as Mum, Chloe and I were having a sort of AA-style sharing event over the kitchen table while Billy played Xbox and Mabel trotted back and forth handing us Helvanian fuckoons and leaves from the garden and patting us kindly, the doorbell rang again. It was Daniel, looking desperate and holding an overnight bag.
Jones, my dear girl, I have been released from the rehab at Sinbin. I got back to the flat and I actually... I don't want to be alone, Jones. Could I possibly come into the hellhole for a minute? Just...
His voice cracked.
Be in some sort of human company, which I know I'm not going to try and shag.
All right, I said, trying to ignore the insult, given the sensitivity of the moment. But you have to promise you won't try to shag Chloe. It was quite an odd evening, as social occasions go, but I think everyone enjoyed it. By the time Daniel had finished with her, Chloe thought she was Charlize Theron and that Graham wasn't fit to touch the hem of her skirt, which he isn't, whoever he is. And Mum, as she cuddled Mabel, eating alternate chocolate buttons with her, slurping red wine, and getting completely covered in all of it, was quite coming round to the idea of Kenneth Garside. I mean, he's terribly charming, is Kenneth. It's just that he's very highly sexed. Daniel, while saying, "What on earth is wrong with that, Mrs. Jones?" turned out to be really, really good at the Xbox. But then he ruined the whole thing in the hallway at the end by putting his hand right up Chloe's skirt. I mean, right up to her knickers. Part 4. The Great Tree. Summer of Fun. Saturday, 31st of August, 2013. £133. Still. Miracle. Boyfriends, 0. Children, 2. Lovely. Friends, loads. Holidays, 3, counting mini break. Screenwriting jobs, 0. Possibility of screenwriting jobs, slight. Days till school starts, 4. Major shocks, 1. It has been a brilliant summer. I called up Brian the agent and asked him to get me off the leaves in his hair, and Brian laughed and said,
"Finally. What took you so long?"
And Brian thinks we should have a go with my new screenplay idea, Time Stands Still Here, which is an updating of Virginia Woolf's To the Lighthouse, only with a bit more structure, set in a former lighthouse and Coast Guard's cottages holiday complex from the Rural Retreats brochure, in which Mrs. Ramsay has an affair with a friend of her son James. Magda and Jeremy invited us to Paxos for a week, where there were lots of friends with kids. And Woney, who has now had liposuction, was parading around in brightly coloured swimsuits and matching sarongs,
swinging her hair extensions and frightening Cosmo. And although Rebecca and the kids were away touring with Jake, there were playdates with Jeremiah and his mum, and Fazia and Bikram, and Cosmata and Thelonious. We tried to do something with the garden, which consisted of planting 3 begonias. We went away to a little cottage by the sea in Devon for 3 nights with Mum, and had a great time. And Mum comes over a lot, just to do baking and things with Billy and Mabel. And she doesn't criticise my housekeeping or child-rearing any more, and we all really like it. And she has them to stay, and they love it, though it is a bit late in the day, because I've got no one to shag in the empty house now. But I try to stand like a great tree and take the stick about Rockster. The love that could not be, as Tom and Arcus have dramatically dubbed it, and just be happy that even if no one ever loves me or shags me again ever, at least I know it's not completely out of the question. Now, however, I'm trying to deal with a growing alarm about going back to school, the different homeworks, which will probably be beyond my capabilities, the different days for show and tell, and shin pads. More alarmingly, find myself looking back over all my encounters with Mr. Wallacker, the tree, the snow, the sports day, the Botox, the concert, all his attempts at kindness to me, and I feel shallow, and think maybe he wasn't just trying to make me feel stupid. Maybe he did really care. But he was married, for fuck's sake, even if it was to an over-plastic surgery drunk lady. He had kids. What was he doing nearly kissing me and confusing me? And I gave him an earful, and he saw me with Rockster, and he thinks I'm a condom-buying, syphilis-infected, shallow cougar, and now we are going to have to face each other every day at school. 4 p.m. Just went round to Rebecca's, who was back from the touring, and blurted out the whole confusion about Mr. Wallacker and the school concert and the Heath. "Hmm," she said. "None of it adds up. He doesn't add up. Have you got a photo? Any other info?" I spooled through the phone and found a shot of the concert and Mr. Wallacker accompanying Billy. I watched as Rebecca stared at the photo, frowning slightly. She spooled through some more. "This is Capthorpe House, right? Where they have festivals and stuff?" "Yes." "I know exactly who this is. He isn't a school teacher." I looked at her in consternation. Oh, God, he was a weirdo. "He plays a bit of jazz piano?" I nodded. She went to the cupboard, slightly dislodging the plastic garden vine woven into her hair, and took out a bottle of red wine. "He's called Scott. He was at college with Jake." "He's a musician?" "No, yeah, well, no," she looked at me. "That's a hobby. He went into the SAS. "The Special Air Service?" "He was James Bond. It explained everything. The one, sir, two, sir, Billy jumping and rolling from the tree, the gun reflex at sports day. Bond." "When did he start at the school?"
"Last year, December."
"I bet it's him. He went off to Sandhurst, then he was abroad a lot, but they kept in touch in a man-friend, i.e. not very often, sort of way. Jake ran into him a few months ago. He'd been in Afghanistan. Some bad shit had happened. He said he was back and keeping it simple." Rebecca suddenly laughed. "He thinks teaching at a London private school is keeping it simple. Has he seen your quadrant living chart?"
"And he's married?"
"Not if it's him. He's got 2 boys, right, at boarding school? He was married, but not anymore. She was a nightmare."
"Is she really plastic surgeried?"
"Exactly. She turned into a major spender. Clothes, charity luncheons, all that bollocks. Total plastic surgery queen. When he went abroad, she started sleeping with her personal trainer, filed for divorce, and tried to fleece him. That place, Capthorpe Hall, is the family pile. I think she might have tried to get back with him, now she's made herself look like the bride of Wildenstein. I'll ask Jake next time I see him."
Back to school. Friday, 13th of September, 2013. Minutes late for school pickups, 0. But only as trying to impress Mr. Wallacker. Conversations with Mr. Wallacker,
0. Seconds of eye contact with Mr. Wallacker, 0. 9:15 p.m. It seems Rebecca was right, and although I have not breathed a word about any of it, except obviously to Talitha, Jude and Tom, the news is out that Mr. Wallacker is not married. Which is awful, because now there is a feeding frenzy over Mr. Wallacker. Everyone is trying to fix Mr. Wallacker up with their single friend. Fazia did suggest trying to shove me at him, but it is pointless. Even though my heart leaps now when I see him on the steps, Mr. Wallacker does not come up and tease me any more. Mr. Wallacker does not run into us on the heath. The magic is gone, and it is all my own fault. Mr. Wallacker is in charge of more and more things at the school. Sport, chess, music, pastoral care. He is like Russell Crowe in Gladiator, when he was a slave, and organized the other slaves into an army and defeated all the Greeks, or Romans. It's like putting ants down in any situation. Ants will just do what ants do. If you put someone really cool and capable down anywhere, they will just be cool and capable. And be set up with every unattached woman in sight, except me. Friday, 27th of September, 2013. 9:45 p.m. It's you he loves, said Tom, on his fourth mojito in the York and Albany. Look, can we just shut up about Mr. Effing Wallacker? I muttered. I've accepted my life now. It's good. It's the three of us. We're not broke. I'm not lonely anymore. I'm a great tree. And the leaves in his hair is going to be made, encouraged Jude. What's left of it? I said darkly. But at least you'll get to go to the premiere, baby, said Tom. You might meet someone there, if I'm invited. If he's not calling you, if he's not texting you, he's just not that into you, said Jude, unhelpfully. But Mr. Wallacker has never called her or texted her, said Tom squiffily. Who are we talking about here? Can we please stop talking about Mr. Wallacker? I don't even like him, and he doesn't like me. Well, you did give him rather an earful, darling, said Talitha. But there was so much depth to what was building, said Tom. When he's hot, he's hot. When he's not, he's not, said Jude. Why don't you get Rebecca to fix you up, said Tom. 10 p.m. Just went round to Rebecca's. She shook her head. It never works, that sort of thing. They sense it a mile off by radar. Just let it unfold. The Mighty Jungle. Friday, 18th of October, 2013. Number of times listened to The Lion Sleeps Tonight. 45. Continuing. 9:15 p.m. The choir auditions have come round again. Billy is lying in bed singing The Lion Sleeps Tonight, then going, ee-oo, 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 in a high-pitched voice, while Mabel yells, Shut up, Billy! Shut up! This year, we have been practicing hitting actual notes. Was, in fact, quite carried away with self this evening, teaching them do-re-mi, parroting Maria in The Sound of Music. I actually do know the whole of The Sound of Music off by heart. Mummy, said Billy. Yes. Can you stop, please? Monday, 21st of October, 2013. Times practiced The Lion Sleeps Tonight before school, 24. Hours spent worrying whether Billy will get into choir, 7. Times changed outfit to pick up Billy from choir auditions, 5. Minutes early for pickup, 7. Good. Apart from reasons the same, i.e. impressing hopeless love prospect. 3:30 p.m. Just about to pick up Billy and get choir audition results, beside self with nerves. 6 p.m. Freakishly was already waiting inside the school gates before Billy came out. I saw Mr. Wallacker emerge onto the steps and glance round, but he ignored me. Was sunk into gloom. Realizing that now he was officially single, he feared that all single women, including me, were going to nibble at him like piranhas. Mummy! Billy emerged, grinning the fantastic ear-to-ear grin as though his face was going to burst. I got in! I got in the choir. Delirious with joy, I encircled him in my arms, at which he grunted, "Get off," like an adolescent, and glanced nervously at his friends. "Let's go and celebrate," I said. "I'm so proud of you. Let's go to McDonald's."
"Well done, Billy." It was Mr. Wallacker. "You kept trying, and you made it. Good effort."
I said, thinking maybe this was the moment when I could apologize and explain, but he just walked off, leaving me with only his pert bum to look at. I just ate 2 Big Macs with fries, a double chocolate shake, and a sugar doughnut. When he's hot, he's hot. When he's not, he's not. But at least there is always food.
Parents' Evening. Tuesday, 5th of November, 2013. 9 p.m.
Maybe he isn't not hot. I mean, not completely not hot. Arrived at parents' evening, admittedly a tad late, to find most of the parents preparing to leave, and Billy's form teacher, Mr. Pitlochry Howard, looking at his watch. Mr. Wallacker strode in with an armful of reports.
"Ah, Mrs. Darcy," he said. "Decided to come along after all."
"I have been at a meeting," I said, hoity-toitily, even though unaccountably, as yet, no one has asked for a meeting about Time Stands Still Here, my updating of To the Lighthouse, and settled myself with an ingratiating smile in front of Mr. Pitlochry Howard.
"How is Billy?" said Mr. Pitlochry Howard, kindly.
Always feel uncomfortable when people say this. Sometimes it's nice if you think they really care, but I paranoically imagined he meant there was something wrong with Billy. "He's fine," I said, bristling. "How is he, you know, at school?"
"He seems very happy."
"Is he all right with the other boys?" I said anxiously.
"Yes, yes, popular with the boys, very cheerful. Gets a bit giggly in the class sometimes."
"Right, right," I said, suddenly remembering Mum getting a letter from my headmistress, suggesting that I had some sort of pathological giggling problem. Fortunately, Dad went in and gave the teacher an earful, but maybe it was a genetic disorder.
"Don't think we need to worry too much about giggling," said Mr. Wallacker. "What was the issue you had with the English?"
"Well, the spellings," Mr. Pitlochry Howard began.
"Still," said Mr. Wallacker.
Well, you see," I said, springing to Billy's defence, "he's only little. And also, as a writer, I believe language is a constantly evolving, fluctuating thing, and actually communicating what you want to say is more important than spelling and punctuating it." I paused for a moment, remembering Imogen at green light, accusing me of just putting strange dots and marks in here and there where I thought they looked nice. "I mean, look at realize," I went on. "It used to be spelt with a Z, and now it's Americanized. That's with an S, by the way. And I notice you're spelling it on the tests with an S because computers do now," I finished triumphantly.
"Yes, marvellous, with a single L," said Mr. Wallacker. "But at this present moment in time, Billy needs to pass his spelling tests or he'll feel like a Burke. So could you perhaps practice when you two are running up the hill in the mornings just after the bell has rung?"
"Okay," I said, looking at him under lowered brows. "How is his actual writing? I mean, creatively."
"Well," said Mr. Pitlochry Howard, rustling through his papers.
Yes, we asked them to write about something strange."
"Let me see," said Mr. Wallacker, putting on his glasses.
"Oh, God, it would be so great if we could both put on our reading glasses on a date without feeling embarrassed."
"Something strange, you say?" He cleared his throat.
"Mummy. In the mornings, when we wake Mummy up, her hair is crazy. Eek! It blows up. Then she says, we are in an army and we have to get our kit on. One, sir, two, sir, don't panic. But then, epic fail. She poured the muesli in the washing machine and gave us Persil. Mabel was late for infants. They had gone into dissembly. Epic fail level two. Says, attends, like she's a French policeman because of the French parent book. And now Mabel says it to saliva. and also says damn it. Epic fail level 3. When Mummy is working, she types and talks on the phone at the same time, chewing Nicorette. When I didn't get in the choir last year, said it was not epic fail, but X Factor, and next year. It was. And then she found Puffle 2, who was MIA, missing in action, and she cuddled me. But then I came down at night, she was dancing on her own. Killer Queen. Eek! Gwah! Strange. Very strange. I sank into the chair, dismayed. Was this how my children saw me? Mr. Pitlochry Howard was staring down at his papers, red-faced.
Well, said Mr. Wallacker, as you say, it communicates what it's trying to communicate very well. A very vivid picture of something strange.
I met his gaze levelly.
It was all right for him, wasn't it? He was trained in giving orders, and had packed his boys off to boarding school, and could use the holidays to casually perfect their incredible music and sporting skills while adjusting their spelling of inauspicious.
How about the rest of it? He said.
No, his marks are very good apart from the spelling. Homework's still pretty disorganized.
Let's have a look, said Mr. Wallacker, rifling through the science papers, then picking up the planets one. Write 5 sentences, each including a fact about Uranus.
He paused. Suddenly could feel myself wanting to giggle.
He only did 1 sentence. Was there a problem with the question?
I think the problem was it seemed rather a lot of facts to come up with about such a featureless galactical area, I said, trying to control myself.
Oh, really? You find Uranus featureless?
I distinctly saw Mr. Wallacker suppress a giggle. Yes, I managed to say, had it been Mars, the famed red planet, with recent robot landings, or